This segment of the podcast is sponsored by Traveling Nice Experiences, here to help you create new memories one experience at a time. Contact Traveling Nice Experiences at www.travelingniceexperiences.com to book your summer 2021 travel. Once again, that's www.travelingniceexperiences.com. We're ready to help you create your next memorable experience.
Previously on the What a Word podcast.
Right? Everybody is looking for your content, or everybody's looking for what you produce, or everybody needs something from you. And we can be driven either by ego or by guilt to say, okay, if these people are counting on me, if these people are depending on me, I have to be there for them. But I love the permission Jesus gives us to not be at the disposal of everyone all the time. Jesus replies in verse 38, and he says, let us go somewhere else to the nearby villages so I can preach there also. That is why I have come. So Jesus hears, look, people are looking for you. He's come to earth to be the Messiah. And he says, no, I am not going to be subject to your approval or disapproval in how I manage my time and how I manage my life. I know that you want something from me. I know that you feel you need something from me, but I'm not just here for you. Like, I'm leaving and I'm going somewhere else. I want to minister to other people. First, we see one, he's resting. He's in a solitary place. He's having some time alone. And then two, he is not driven by the expectations and the demands of the crowd. And I just want to give other people permission, the same way Randall set up that boundary, the same way Jesus set up his boundaries. We can set up our own. We don't have to be there for everybody all the time. I'm not advocating selfishness or self-centeredness, but I'm advocating self-awareness, where we recognize our limits and we say, no, I have to come aside and rest a while. And we can give people the room to walk on their own two feet, to figure it out on their own, to not always have to rely on us to be a crutch for their either white fragility or for their challenges in presenting in that day and in that time. I think sometimes we're so afraid to let people stand on their own that we overcorrect. I think we're so afraid to sometimes leave people on the side of the road and not be the good Samaritan, that we overcorrect. And now we end up on the side of the road ourselves needing a good Samaritan because we haven't been good stewards of not only our physical health, but also our mental and emotional health.
You are listening to the What a Word podcast, an interview style podcast where guests bring their unique experiences and insight on culture, life's challenges, and faith. Each episode is seasoned with words which will inspire and encourage. Now here is your host, Ryan Sharp.
Thank you for joining me on the What a Word podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Sharp. Welcome again to another installment where guests share their stories of vulnerability, resilience, hope, and faith. And today will be no different. My guest is Charisse Fonts. She's the founder of Culture Circle, and she helps growing companies navigate their culture and inclusion with anthropology and humanity. She also runs a nonprofit 501c3 called Humanity Power, which is dedicated to ending the isms that are harming humanity. She's a birth doula, and when she isn't doing this work, she's spending time with her family. I came across Ms. Fonts based on a post that addressed her vulnerabilities, being homeless, non-housed, while working. And it confirms for me that we can never truly tell what individuals are dealing with, their challenges, what they're going through. And I believe her story of resilience and hope and faith will inspire someone listening. Thank you for allowing me in this space. And I'm hoping you enjoyed my season one's guest, Pastor SLB Cadet's recap, also known as the podcast Dub Plate. He reminds us that while we're doing the work of helping others, we should have the permission to create boundaries. So we are also preserving our mental and physical health. A powerful word. And in the 60 plus episodes, my guests have challenged me with just their insight and their abilities to address the nuances of life struggles, culture, faith, and hope. I'm hoping you'll enjoy the upcoming episodes, and I believe you'll enjoy today's episode as well. Please join me in welcoming my guest, Charisse Fonts, to the What a Word podcast. Thank you so much, Charisse, for joining me today on the What a Word podcast. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Ryan. It's good to be here.
I came across an article you put out, and I'm honored that you would join us to share about that article. The article is captioned, "Nobody Knew at Work Knew I Was Homeless." So there's some inference just in that heading. One, it says you were working, nobody knew, and you were in fact homeless. Could you describe for listeners what you were going through during that season?
Yes, and I love how you called it a season. I think that's very key in language and in how we should perceive or how things should be perceived. I mean, nature operates in seasons. So during that season, I had two kids and I was pregnant with my third. And I was had gone through the hotel and I had got a room in the shelter. And the shelter I was staying at had a 3-month minimum or maximum. So you could only stay there for 3 months and then you'd rotate back into the hotels and the motels. And I came into the shelter maybe 3.5, maybe 4 months pregnant, and I needed a job. And I think I did everything wrong to get a job, to be honest. Like, my resume wasn't perfect. The cover letters had typos, and it was just, you know, I was really just trying to push out quantity over quality because I'm like, I got to get this job. I'm on the clock. And the interviews that I did get, I would disclose that I was pregnant and that wouldn't work out. And so, you know, it was really coming down to the wire. And then I found myself interviewing at this really great culture, really great company. And it started to change my life. And so I had, at that point, I was still in the homeless shelter. And during my time there, I had moved into transitional housing. So still under the unhoused homeless umbrella. But, you know, I had a lot of other things going on that it wasn't necessarily I was trying to keep my situation from other people. It was more so like, this is the, when I go back to the shelter or when I go back to the transitional housing, I am a file. I have a case manager. I am, you know, essentially moving through this system. When I'm at work, I am human. I am treated like human. I am kind, and people are kind to me. We are all working towards a mutual satisfying goal within the department that I was in. And I didn't feel like it was the space to disclose. Plus, I was dealing with another couple of things during that time, a custody battle and testifying against an assaulter from 10 years past. So there was a lot of stuff going on, and I didn't have the, it was almost like there was a levy, you know? And if I were to open up about one, the rest would just come. And I was like, no, I want to keep this space for me. So that was that season going into it.
So what you've amplified for me is, and you put it in the article, is we never really know what people are going through. And yeah. And you've made it even more specific. We don't know what people we work with are going through. Absolutely. But listeners are hearing, and what I've seen is it sounds like a very accomplished person, very proactive. What led though to homelessness? Was it underemployment? Because we've all heard, you're a paycheck or two away.
Yeah.
What led to your homelessness or that situation?
Well, you know, everyone's route is different in life because everyone's route in life is different. Mine had to do with a series of unwise decisions. So I was trying to follow a relationship, moved out of the place that I was in without really any foresight or wisdom, and exerted all the money I had, found myself homeless and pregnant, and was like, I don't want to go back to where I came from. I need to figure this out for myself. So a lot of it was, you know, because when I reflect and how, as I've been talking, like I could have probably gone back home. But for whatever reason, and where I was in my maturity, where I was in my life, I didn't have that, you know. Because looking back, I'd be like, oh, that would have been the easiest thing to do, to not go through this. But stubborn or hard-headed, or, you know, just decisions that led me to this decision of I need to fix this for myself, and possibly shame and guilt that kept me from going back home was probably one of a big factor in it. But nevertheless, I found myself in this situation and I was like, okay, what can I do to fix this? And I don't know if I would have, like, if I was in the same position, I probably would have asked for more help and went back home. But my level of maturity was a lot different back then, and my values and decision making was a lot different at that time. And so that's what led me to this this season in my life. And what's interesting too is, as I've talked to other people that have been unhoused and homeless, some of it are very small decisions: not saving money, spending what you don't have, going into environments that you know aren't healthy, not reading the signs around you, and or not, you know, or feeling like you have to take it all on your own and not actually reaching for help. So I'm not saying that being homeless and or unhoused is avoidable, but I do believe that there are series of events that almost like signposts that tell us, like, hey, we're going in the wrong direction. Leaving the job we should have left a year ago, you know, different things like that. So, I mean, I know I'm kind of speaking in a more, you know, expanded view, but that's what comes up for me when I think about how I ended up in the situation that I was in. Because some people, you know, they see people that are unhoused and they're like, oh, they're drug addicts. That's usually, depending on where they are in their story, they weren't always that way. Or depending on where they were, you know, depending on, mm-hmm. you know, what you see currently isn't what actually got them there. Sometimes it's a death. Sometimes it's a disease. Sometimes it's, you know, and there is no way for us to look and gauge. So that's what led me to that situation and time in my life.
What comes out from what you said to me also is the vulnerability. Mm. That's what theme comes out in your story. And not only for you, but for other individuals who are on that journey. What did you experience as a mother with two young kids and pregnant? How was it to navigate that system?
You know, looking back, I didn't have this knowingness, but I'm also a birth doula. So I help families birth their babies. And I've been a birth doula for about 3.5 years. I think this will be my fourth year. And there's something that's magical when you are carrying a life form. And I didn't realize it then, but I think that there was a lot of strength that I got from being pregnant, from knowing, like, I mean, one of the big motivators was like, if I don't get out of this cycle, I'm going to birth my baby, go back to a hotel, a motel, or come back to this shelter. Mm-hmm. And that was like, no, you know, it's almost the same strength and adrenaline that mothers get if they're lifting a car off of their own child. You know, you just do. And in that doing, you become. And so out of the doing, I became a lot of what you see today, because I could have, you know, there was a lot of mental gymnastics that I had to go through. And there were times where I didn't feel like I even had the space to cry and worry about our situation. I didn't have the luxury and the time to do that. That came after, believe it or not, when I became, you know, when I got into permanent housing, and then when I got my first own apartment, it took me 6-7 years to heal from the notion of less than or homeless, or that word defining me, or fear-based, or lack of energy, or scarcity. It took me a while to heal from that. So during that time, I think, you know, I've always grown up as an optimist. Smiley, happy, woman of faith, just believing that there's more. And I think that's what helped me go through this with my kids, and just knowing, like, it wasn't more so I need to provide better for you. It was like, this is not acceptable. Like, we gotta get out of this situation. Because what was interesting about the shelter was there was all different types of people. The family that I shared the bathroom with, they were a family of five. Both of the parents worked. There was a woman in the shelter with a teenage boy. And I found out that she would come back every time. She would stay for the full 3 months, go back through the cycle and come back. In fact, she would ask for the same room. And I just remember thinking, I do not want to become that comfortable. And it was in the uncomfortableness that I was like, we got it. And when you get there, and I know that there are people, you know, maybe yourself have been in situations where you're like, I don't have time and space to worry about the mundane right now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I need to get out of this situation. It's almost like if being chased by, I don't know, a mountain lion or something. You don't have time.
Right, right.
To think about, your body, in fact, every part of your being goes into agreement with getting out of that situation. And I think that's what happened. And then also being, you know, pregnant with this light, this beautiful universe child, Marley, who she's, you know, my joy.
And congratulations on.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, Marley was, you know, I think that there was just, it's hard to explain, but it's easy to mm-hmm. You can feel it, you know.
Well, so homelessness, and you've described the process. You talked about the shelter, the hotel, transitional housing. These are terms of art for many people. Walk us through, I guess, these steps. Once one is homeless, what did you have to navigate?
Yeah, so I remember showing up to the county office and just saying, hey, I have no place to stay. I have two kids and I'm pregnant. And they were like, okay, let's get you in the system. Here are some of the resources. Let's get you a hotel voucher. I mean, it was fairly quick. From there, I stayed at this motel for a little bit, and then I was able to move into this hotel. And then from the hotel, once a room was available at the shelter, I was able to stay, get into the shelter. And the shelter, I had a case manager that I met with a few times a week. I had to sign in when I went in, when I went out. I had to fill out job logs, which I threw away the rest of them, but I have one left to remind me, you know, that it is possible. So I had to complete job logs. I had chores. My chore was to clean the bathroom every morning. You know,
what they about childcare?
So they had childcare on site. So I would drop the boys off, and they were young enough to where they weren't in school yet. Yet they were almost school age, but that made it a little bit easier. So they did have childcare on site. I would say and I didn't necessarily experience this, but I did hear rumors within the shelter that there were drugs happening. When the stomach flu went around on our floor, everyone got it. My son got it. I did not get it, but like you have to deal with that communal component of it. And that, you know, not everybody there has the same motive and intent that you do. You know, so, but I think honestly, me being pregnant really, a lot of people had compassion for me. I think that was like one of the big factors because I witnessed and heard certain things and I'm like, oh, wow. And I never experienced any of it. Whenever we would go down and to go get donations or get food, people would let me go first, you know, like, there was just this, I was treated with kindness there as well. And the other challenge though with the shelter is because they follow a very linear way in and linear way out, there isn't much wiggle room for variables. So for example, if you do work a night job, it conflicts with the curfew that the shelter has. And so then it makes it almost harder for you to stay there because if they don't make the exception, you either can't stay there or you have to change your job, which might be a little bit more challenging. So there was some, you know, highs and lows, but for the most part, I did not care. I was like, I need to get through this. And in fact, when I had moved to transitional housing. So transitional housing is, it can be an apartment building. It could be, I think most of them are apartment buildings or just your own space. So I had a kitchen, I had two bedrooms and like the front, it was furnished. I had did such a great job from going from the whole program that they had put together that my case manager presented me in front of the board of the organization. And essentially what they had was this permanent transitional housing house that they had only one of the church, a church had donated it to them. And you could stay there for a whole year. And I remember sitting in front of this board, it had been like 25 people, probably felt like more. And me telling them my story, them looking over my case, and then them determining that I was suitable for this housing. And I think mm-hmm. I was 7.5 months pregnant, mm-hmm. still working. And that's where I brought my baby. That's where I built that nursery. So that was, again, I still have the picture of the house. And we stayed there for a year. I still saved. And then from there, you know, their goal was to get me into my own housing. And that's where it started to get scary because for that, you need credit, mm-hmm. you need money, you know, and I was shaky on both. At that time, I had transitioned out of the job that I was at when I talked about my story. Mm-hmm. A lot of my education is self-taught. And my path, I was an administrative assistant for a good amount of my career. This is not a bad thing, but it is the best way that I can say this. I am very ordinary. I don't have any letters before my name. I don't have a bunch of letters after my name. I don't know if I ever will. But I'm extremely gifted. I'm extremely gifted in being able to see humans and connect with them in deep ways. And I think that has been, there are no certificates for that, there are no degrees for that.
Are you enjoying the What a Word podcast and want to learn how to share it with others on social media? It's easy. Go on your favorite podcast app, find the What a Word podcast, and hit share. Please remember to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you won't miss any episodes. And if this podcast has encouraged or inspired you, then please consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps new listeners find us easier. Thank you.
You mentioned being self-taught. Do you believe being self-taught puts you on a parallel track in terms of what the expectations are of individuals in our society?
I think that education comes in different ways. And, you know, I think that the lessons that are creating the resiliency of life aren't necessarily learned in the classroom. I remember a custodian one day. He looked like Mr. T from A-Team, and he talked like him too. In fact, they nicknamed him Mr. T. He was just amazing. And I remember he said, you know, Charisse, you know, the only thing you need in life is self-discipline, the discipline of oneself. And I remember looking at him and I was like, sure, okay, got it. I didn't realize how important that actually was. And it's while school, and nothing against formal education, but there's something around experience and knowledge, you know, that really do create some of the lessons in which we came here to learn. So a lot of this stuff is self-taught. And then I stay very close, I stay very close to wisdom. And I've always been drawn to the elders and listening to stories and listening to those things and just picking up some of that. You know, they would say, you've been here before, and like some of the ways that I would interpret life. And I do have some formality in my education. It's just doesn't come with letters in the beginning and letters at the end. So I think that, you know, none but ourselves can free our minds. It comes down to a lot of that. And sometimes if you're in a environment that amplifies group thinking versus individual thinking, it could have some effects on you later in life as you're trying to navigate discernment and decisiveness and, you know, not concerned with what other people think and do. I think that's another big thing. I always make sure that I am doing the best that I can in the moment that I can, but I am not concerned of the opinions of others. They're fickle. You know, you watch a sports team, one minute they're cheering for the person, the next minute they're calling them, you know, a name. We have that fickleness within us. And so I've learned that, the individuality is, I mean, you come in by yourself, you leave by yourself. That individuality, that there's a lot of stuff inside of us that can teach us, and a lot of things that are outward in nature that can teach us as well. And so, you know, I don't think you have to have a formal education to achieve greatness.
Sure. When was the earliest that you knew that the conventional learning setup was not for you? And I'll ask it two ways too. Were you a good student in the conventional setting?
Where's my mom on this one? I have always been a bit rogue. From the earliest, I was always a why child. Why? Very talkative. My mom would say that I would just go, I'm Sharice. I live here. And this is my phone number. And what's your name? And why do you look like that? You know, and just I would go. And one other thing about me is when I was younger, I would also mimic. I'm actually a really good impersonator. I won't do anything here, but like I would mimic the pastor that, you know, I would mimic the woman with gospel jaw. And my grandma was like, don't do that. You know, I would mimic and I would just pick up. And I just learned differently. I don't know if I was necessarily, I wasn't like a troublemaker, but I definitely had my resistance with things. I think one, this will be an example. My mom has told me this story a few times and I'm just recalling it. So I think it is for this moment. I was in preschool, maybe kindergarten. And I decided that it was okay to pee in the middle of the yard. You know, just like, where does that?
Free spirit.
Where does that come? You know, exactly. You know, and I think that, and I've also seen how my thinking has influenced some of my kids. So I remember my son, when we were in the shelter, he didn't like speak normal, as they would, you know, he used little words or they were hard for people to understand. And I remember that they wanted me to do therapy for him. And I said, I want to try and I want to see if he comes out of this on his own. Mm-hmm. And eventually he did. And he was a thumb sucker. So I was like, I think that maybe, you know, and so he did. And then Marley used to, you know, the way her speech wasn't, and Charlotte. And like, I was just, I'm just going to let them. And sometimes I think that that was growing up. I sometimes wish people would just, I remember they tried to change me from right-handed to left-handed. Just let me be. I am left-handed. All my mom's girls are left-handed.
Right.
My mom is left-handed. My grandmother is left-handed. And, you know, I remember they're like, that's the devil's hand. And I'm just like, hey, I'm going to go in the flow. And that has gotten me in great places. And it also has gotten me in not so great places. But I think the connector is the wisdom, knowledge, and experience, and dabbing and dwelling in those, and that trifecta has really allowed me to be where I am now. Just not even, it's not even physically, it's mentally, it's emotionally, it's spiritually. That has really played a big part in that.
Awesome. That's powerful and sobering at the same time, because someone is listening and they're like, I connect with Sharice. I am not a conventional person. I reject that. I feel constrained by what society says the landmarks are to get to success. And her story is an attractive one. What can you say to us about the need for compassion in terms of where people are and accepting people for who they are?
You know, compassion is one of those words that we learn in the beginning and really understand at the end. And it is encompassing of all that is good within us, no matter who we are. Everyone has a thread of it in them. And the more you utilize your compassion is key. But I think the big part about compassion is you must be compassionate with yourself as well, because you cannot give what you do not have. And I think that as we navigate, there are moments in which we can be compassionate towards others and compassionate towards ourselves. And that's not quick to judgment. It's providing grace. It's providing space. It's acknowledging our humanness in all its imperfections. Because one of the things I like to tell people in the beginning, hey, I'm human. So everything that comes before and comes after that, just know that I am learning a lot of different things along the way. And that is in my humanness. That comes primary before all of these other things that I am doing is my humanness, because that's where I find the compassion of like, oh, if I mess up on something, it's like, I'm human. I'm all, now what do I do with that? Am I going to allow it to damper me, or am I going to continue to try? And having compassion for yourself gives that space to be able to try again and go again and love again and continue to go in, even when you're like, I will never receive this back. You know, it's bigger than us. And it's a very key thing. And could you repeat the second part of your question?
Oh, I think it related to that person who feels constrained.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Well, I will say that you are a spiritual being in a physical form. There's a 1 in 4 trillion chance that you even exist right now. And even more odds that you are listening to my voice. And while we do live in a society that loves to label, puts boxes, checks those boxes, unchecks those boxes, there is something deeper within us. And we came to live the fullest expression of ourselves in a multiple different various of ways, you know. And those ways don't always agree with the linear components of society. And we're like, why am I so exhausted at the end of the day? Why am I feeling burnt out? We are not meant to sit in front of a desk all day. We are not meant to wake up and hit the ground run or sit in traffic, or we were not designed as beings that way. And yes, some of these things have allowed us to self-discovery and mastery and things like that. But majority of our time should be spent in nature, eating live food, spending time in community, and spending isolated time with ourselves. You know, Tupac said, if we change the way we live, change the way we eat, change the way we live, change the way we treat each other. Like, when we are in a society that doesn't support that, where we're in back-to-back meetings, it constrains us. And not to say that everything in society is bad, because it's not. It's just, how are we utilizing it in relationship to what our being and purpose is? Because like my grandmother used to say, it takes all kinds of people. It takes all kinds of people. And every person you meet, it's almost like every person you meet, and this kind of goes back to compassion. Every person you meet is like watching, like coming into a movie that has been paused. You are only seeing a single frame. You aren't seeing the origin, and nor are you seeing the ending. Right. And when we realize that, not only are we able to be more compassionate, but we're also able to realize that there is not a linear way to this life. It is very much lunar, like the moon. And a lot of us are searching and seeking from spaces of survival mode, ultimately trying to get whatever is defined as success. But we are really yearning for our significance that leads to our transcendence. Because we light up when others light up. and we dim down when others dim down. There is a connected wovenness around us. There is an Ubuntu within our humanity. I am because we are. And I think that if you are feeling like you don't necessarily, you don't need to fit, you belong already. So go find what makes your heart sing and solve what breaks your heart. And you will no longer feel the barrier of feeling constrained or trapped or feeling as if you need to fit your lunar into something linear.
Powerful. And you mentioned lighting up. And I remembered earlier when you mentioned your role as a doula, your face lit up. Could you share with us what you do as a doula along with what else you're currently doing, and also just tie it in with ways listeners can follow your journey as well?
Yes. Oh man, being a doula changed my life. I've always been fascinated with birth and pregnancies and the health and holistic components. And so I serve as a birth doula for families. I'm also a postpartum doula. So I help families go through their pregnancy and their birth. I'm there in the birth room, whether it's hospital or home birth. And then I'm also postpartum doula, which is helping the family acclimate and transition from the birth and bringing in this new baby to their family. And it is one of the most amazing things that I've been able to witness and just see the origin and the beginning of life and those little babies. And I just melt. I just love babies so much. And I love pregnancy so much. And so that's what I do as a birth doula. And in fact, I bring a lot of birth work into the culture space. You know, I wonder if there's another way I could call myself other than a consultant, because what I do is I'm guiding companies and cultures to creating the environments that ultimately they need those pillars for their business to actually get to that next level. And so I do that with a lot of the methodologies and methods I use as a doula, and philosophies as a doula. And so, you know, it is what lights me up. And it is one of those things that I will, I love birth. I also love talking about culture. And I also have the fascination with business. And I also love humanity. And so I've been able to weave those into the companies and the things that I've built with Culture Circle and Humanity Power. And then also as a doula. So if anything of what I've shared has resonated with you, you can find me on LinkedIn. You can email me at Charisse@culturecircle.co. You can check out humanitypower.org. And I'm always open for a conversation with anybody that wants to talk about any of those things, or even things that are different topics. I'm open. I'm open to learning, listening, holding space. And there's nothing in my life experience that I'm not willing to share with someone else.
Awesome. Charisse Ponce is a visionary founder, author, educator, and speaker. And she is doing a lot with her not-for-profit, Humanity Power, TM. When she isn't doing this work, Charisse is spending time with her family. Charisse, thank you so much for joining me as a guest today on the Water Word Podcast.
Thank you so much, Ryan, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Most welcome. Thank you so much. Blessings to you and your family as well.
Thank you. Every person you meet is like coming into a movie that has been paused. You are only seeing a single frame. You aren't seeing the origin, and nor are you seeing the ending. And when we realize that, not only are we able to be more compassionate, but we're also able to realize that there is not a linear way to this life. It is very much lunar, like the moon. And a lot of us are searching and seeking from spaces of survival mode, ultimately trying to get whatever is defined as success. But we are really yearning for our significance that leads to our transcendence. Because we light up when others light up. and we dim down when others dim down. There is a connected wovenness around us. There is an Ubuntu within our humanity. I am because we are. And I think that if you are feeling like you don't necessarily, you don't need to fit, you belong already. So go find what makes your heart sing and solve what breaks your heart. And you will no longer feel the barrier of feeling constrained or trapped or feeling as if you need to fit your lunar into something linear.